respect to the matter before this meeting, that's fine. Wonder if you could get me with the doctor, they said, I think it's a good idea. Sir, I didn't know what to talk about, and I was a doctor, and I...
Stayed within the realm of Paris and terrorism. He said from Paris, he had anecdotes about himself in Grimigo and himself with the Chinese foreign minister. And the point of that, my answer, deal with both of them, they wouldn't deal with each other. It's related to your efforts at the time.
That's correct.
Other countries are dealing with the United States in high level respect, building and attributable to your efforts. New atmosphere, that is basically his theme, which was created by the president. And Rogers found that when we had the problem with the POW release, that there was a new respect for the president. They know he's a hard, tough bargainer. That's why we won. He was able to say the president sticks by his agreement, you stick by yours, and that's how we managed to resolve this. That's essentially what he said about Paris. With regard to terrorism, he spoke now about he, Secretary Rogers, had to get the death penalty. Repeated an earlier statement he had made. He backed up this observation with his talking about how terrorists seem to never spend any time in jail. They're just released by a group of other terrorists and hijacked an airplane. And used that as ransom in order to have these prisoners released. He gave as an example the time he was talking to the Haitian ambassador. And he
that's on terrorism.
Yes,
I'm sorry. I was covering terrorism.
He went to Q&A to Shirley whenever anything went outside of that realm. He indicated the president will probably address himself to that this evening. And we all apologize for this other mishap on this thing today. It might happen tomorrow. No more thoughts on today.
Yeah, I let it go tomorrow. They don't need it. Because you see, I don't have to cover any less than I just need. And we are either before or they do cover it. They got to tell me so that I just.
More policies mentioned today.
Yes, sir. Brought in Secretary Rogers. Apparently, everyone they had told not to. They screwed up. It's not that they just didn't know.
Well, they knew something.
Oh, well, we're going to blame them. I guess they didn't know what we were trying to get at. Anyway, I told them not to kiss them because I didn't want it to be part of it.
Said I think just right.
we've been talking about our budgetary can't cut, for one thing. These gentlemen have all been up testifying every hour on the hour. This term, and had some impressions. The thing we come down to is the thing we discussed before, the need for that secondary advocacy out around the country. And we're going to send a lot of servants out and around from the various domestic departments in support of this. This is one of the things we want to do, at least report to you. Our REA settlement, Secretary Bucks has a report on, and should have been what to talk about. But it has worked so far. The Pope doesn't have horses out there. They're going to have a vote on it this morning. And he did call the votes and postpone now, I understand, until March 15th. I don't think he's that far from caving in. You know, Pope shouts all over the place in Madrid now. He's got a chance. Anchor Nelson's been working very closely with him on this. Our General Counsel Jack Cable's been doing a really good job.
What is the situation? I suppose we don't make a settlement, then we just have to go down and get a rule.
We don't make a settlement. I think you have to do so what they do. I think you can win on that.
All right, we can win.
But, Mr. President,
incidentally, shouldn't Ash sit in on these meetings?
Sure,
if you're going to talk budget, I think he ought to be here. And Ron, you check it out.
The issue, from my point of view, is that
he shouldn't have talked this budget, you understand. But I'm finding this a good idea for him to get exposed to what the hell these guys are facing.
It goes further than that. Special life legislative strategy on major farm, it's a big casino we're after. This currently is going to come up first on the Senate side. I don't think there's a chance of getting the kind of bill we want to have the Senate making. Let's say to those characters up for re-election, they're not enough to go up reduce spending. I want to cut this spending by at least $2 billion in the bill. I can't just put the amendment into this income supplement thing we've got to do. It won't come on the Senate. I think there's a substantial chance that we can get the debt cleared over on the House side. The poll will have me up first to initiate hearings on this farm bill on the House side. The poll knows that he can't pass on the floor of the House the kind of bill that will come out of the Senate committee. But if the Senate passes this thing first, the poll's going to have difficulty in passing the rest out of the main committee. And I've discussed this with the poll. If we can get the decks cleared and the ag committee there on this REA by some kind of compromise, I think there's a reasonable chance that we can initiate the farm legislation on the House side. Hope that you've got to have a decent thing to get past the board. Now, I'm not in favor of compromising on spending. I think if we hold folks' feet to the fire, we see here. But we can get it down on the full rate on the GMT loans, that's generating transmission loans, that's under the big block of these loans. Polk, as I understand, will probably insist on setting aside a part of the revolving fund to be used for REAs. That's fine, because that won't be 2% money. He will probably insist on specific criteria for those REAs that ought to have 2% loans, a small number that are out in sparsely settled territory. He doesn't want to leave that to the discretion of the Secretary. I think, in the final analysis, this will be a good package of proposals that won't cost us any more, probably not as much as the current proposal, straight 5% across the board, which does involve subsidies. That's what I'm saying. It's a big casino. It's a farm business. And frankly, I think the part of the problem is that folks look at the face-saving way out of he doesn't want to report out this Daniel Humphrey bill that puts it right back to 2%. He's looking for a face-saving way out. And I think, frankly, part of our problem on the administration side is that we're looking for a face-saving way out, too. Swallow a couple times pretty hard. One we have to swallow a couple times here. But if we can work out a compromise, it doesn't cost any more than the current proposal. Let's review the bidding for Roy. Full rate on the GMT, revolving fund for RDAs, fixed criteria for 2%, no additional cost. some kind of criteria and make it severe.
Could I just say, I think it's a little different than face saving on our side. This is the flagship of all of those 14 vetoes coming through. And what we do on this will be taken as a signal of our determination, our stand, and all the rest of it.
Which is don't give us set on the subject in the aggregate, because we got subsidy in there now.
I might say that this is perhaps the easiest for the public generally to understand the abuses. 2% money, 80% non-rural, a long old program that's been on the books for many years, the needs now satisfied largely. It's a very easy one to sell as opposed to some of the health things and all the others that get buzzed up with a lot of emotionalism. This is an economy, quite a sizable chunk of money in a way that can be sold to the public, I think. And I think of
sustainability to it.
May I ask the timing on this one versus REAP? The one where you spread the fertilizer on the
reach it conference up there.
So the president would get that one first.
Reap. Get that down here.
They lay the
same level. We're going to go that way.
Only this afternoon, Bob Cook, who is the chief lobbyist in town for REAP here for Limestone, came over and met with Dick Fairbanks and John Larson. But he's there seeing the compromise. He stated very frankly to them, and I know I've lived on it.
Well, he should.
That's an outrage.
Well, I was concerned to see whether they were stupid enough to bring that one to us first and get some cover on the other one.
The problem you have with the farm thing, Captain, is a very different one. Which we have not perhaps been as sensitive to as we might. It's the same thing we have as on the veterans. The veterans thing, of course, on the bigger public appeal. Basically, those who are normally for conservative policies are from the farm bloc. Those who would normally vote with us for conservative policies, and by conservative I mean by foreign policy as well, support unfortunately excessive veterans things. So the question is, how can you save some of those votes for other purposes? See, the problem we've got is that I can hardly think of a senator who isn't small.
mostly, for the most part, people that they say, well, if you don't mention that, I'm going to be against you and everything else. Now, that's the kind of an attitude you run into.
I was wondering, is there any way we could sell what is the fact, and that is that it isn't a rural program, it isn't a farm program, it doesn't help the farmers, it helps a very small non-farm group, really. And it's got a nice rural name to it. The problem with the rural development.
I think we can sell it to the country guy. No problem with that, but I'm saying, Cap, but in this instance, these guys that get dug in on these silly damn burgers, you know, they help the farmers at all. That's the problem too, guys. I mean, get them pounded in, you know, you go up there now, and every elevator in those damn office buildings is full of farmers. NFO and different groups, they're going around from place to place just lobbying the hell out of these guys. It's pretty hard to get business.
You were saying
some mail had been going in, and I thought it was a pretty pitiful exercise so far, don't you? I didn't see what he turned in.
Who turned in?
I was wondering whether anybody in Marshall could bother to get a few letters from the Congress.
I've got the Farm Bureau coming on this side. They're not getting letters, but they're coming on this side. And after that Reed vote up there, they listed all the congressmen that voted the way they voted in the Senate after their 2 million members. I think they'll share where my old lad is. He's got your own front page. Yes.
Is that Farm Bureau?
Yeah, I'll tell you. They did a letter to the Floyd Committee. The bill said, let the record show that the Farm Bureau set out for higher taxes.
The editorial position of the Farm Bureau was favorable.
Excellent.
This whole way. What's the likelihood, what's the possibility of not having the REA as an organization perpetuated, therefore being symbolic of favoring, but having some of the things we've discussed here carried out in the rural development administration
I think that's worse. You don't have to think the REA is an organization. It's too much.
It's got to run out of old programs, but if the new ones could be under the rural development
program,
hopefully they would.
Slipped out here somewhere.
Would that be doing?
No, I think we got to keep the REA as an organization. You got to have some kind of lending organization here, and that's it.
Not the rural development.
That's right.
You've got one problem, and that is that if there's anything that's perceived as a retreat or a loss on this one, it's awfully hard to hold anything off in this budget.
Let me consider this. Now, I have not made personal contact with the Pope, except at a party that I Anthony Nelson is quoting very widely in his conversation with you. What are those words?
He just wanted to come see me.
My own personal relationships with the Pope are good. They run back over a period of 20 years. I've been discussing with my staff whether at the proper time I should go up and discuss with him this whole package and put in the farm, you know, which is the big casino. And let the Pope take leadership on this thing, which he needs. And if we can work out some kind of a deal with him here, that it's not a retreat for us financial-wise, and it won't cost us any more than we're going to spend under the current straight 5% deal, because we got enough, that's going to stick right now. What about that?
Can I put another perspective on that? When Fred Dent went up on the hill on the phase-out of EDA and the Regional Economic Development Commission, it came as a big surprise to the Public Works Committee to realize they'd been had last year by the Rural Development in 1972. Oh, yeah. And they're furious with the idea that we have funded the Rural Development Act in 1972, but we're getting rid of EDA. And they say, why are you doing things like that? And we want at least some transitional money. They're going to mark up the bill tomorrow on the House side. Harshay is convinced he'll have one vote against it within the committee, his own. And that on the floor, the damn thing will go through, and he does feel it will go through the Senate side. As to override, no bets at this point on what will happen. But it seems to me to flag to the rural side in the Ag Committee that you're doing something at this point in time, when they're just marking up the bills over in Public Works, mad already that the Ag Committee has inherited the earth with funding and EDA's phasing out. I just don't know what kind of effect you're going to have over on this side with the EDA and Regional Commission legislation. And it's very hard in any kind of logic to justify a loan program with regard to electricity and not a loan program in rural areas for other economic development. Especially when EDA's criteria are supposed to be out-migration, constant low income, persistent unemployment, and so on.
General, I'm not suggesting a retreat convention.
No, I know, but it's going to be painted as retreat. Now, the question comes up whether you can paint that in a way that they gave up on the idea of trying to keep the programs they had. We recognize the legitimate area in the really impoverished areas or backwards areas of the United States and cut it there at a total cost to the federal government, less than we were even proposing. That's about what you're saying.
That's right.
Sparrow, is there something totally different the farmers really want that we haven't taken any particular stand on that we could go along with one?
No, farmers aren't happy to go. $25 cattle and $37. Oh, my, great man.
I just thought we could get something brand new into the equation.
That's how the EA thing is really is as much partners as it is both the cooperatives and the others that have an interest in the REA as the
seminar. Basically, I think Earl, I guess we're going to have to hold the line up for the reasons that if we start building that water through the dike, take us all down. I don't know what you can do, though, with Hogan Nelson at every opportunity here raising the fact that they've got to get a compromise. And I'm just going to say, well, you guys can talk about it. You talked to him, John, you talked to him.
Sir.
And
well, they continue to negotiate, and the latest word I got is that the negotiations have now fallen apart, that Hogan's hanging tough. And Nelson continues to be very optimistic about getting a settlement, but Pope is not cooperating with his predictions. But given that situation, our guys feel that we ought to hang tough for a while. Maybe Pope will come to us. We got another 2 days. He's put his vote off in his committee because he didn't have the horses.
It's put up a week, I think.
Oh, is it that long?
Well, let's hang tough for a while.
I got hang tough for a week. Probably speak to the father and see what we can get next week.
All right, what's the city situation?
Yeah,
and that's one.
You got a big bill. Pardon? A big bill?
Yeah, you've got a big bill for transition. Is that it? We didn't take this into account in the summer. You and all the other things.
Well, according to Paul, we have. And as a matter of fact, if they're...
Let me say, on that score, you know my opinions of such programs.
Right.
And so the difficulty is that having in that particular study down that road is very difficult to chop it off, having in mind the fact that even though we have it, you may have problems in the series. If you have problems and you don't have it, then we have the responsibility for the
right.
So under those circumstances, we better at least appear to be reasonable. That's what I'm talking about.
Yep.
I think you've got to, I don't know where the hell you are going to be reasonable or how.
Well, according to Paul, and it's really over in Cap's area, but according to Paul, that there was a continuing resolution at $1 billion for the PEP programs, these public employment programs. And that due to some fluke in the last continuing resolution, the one that they passed about 3 days ago, it may well be that the continuing resolution will be at $1.25 billion, which was the level you have been asking for this program, and would be within our budget with respect to it. Ergo, $250 million available for the neighborhood youth programs, which when added to, and Paul wanted to reconfirm these figures, another $300 million that's available out of transportation, recreation, and a number of other programs pulls you up to a very respectable figure for the year. Now, Paul promised to get back to them on that and that we would advise them as soon as the paper had been brought in to you for signature on the continuing resolution. But he was very hopeful that this is all a tempest in a teapot and there is actually money in the budget to do it.
Transition.
Now that, all I can tell you is what he told me, because we were outside our territory. As you gathered from that meeting, their main heat is in that public employment program and the neighborhood youth program, urban renewal and so on. They make some noises, but it isn't terribly acute. But this is a place where they are zeroing in on us. But here again, after you left the room, they're more timid while you're there. They started hammering at some of the others, and Cohen from Minneapolis was spouting off about, there are many other priorities too you fellows aren't doing in the transition. And very frankly, if we let all those fires down, we're just going to be at ground zero again. Now hopefully, on things like this, we can do it with some sleight of hand, because I agree with you. I wouldn't want to be in the position of the city in real trouble this summer, and they've zeroed in on our not having funded this for the transitional year. But Paul's indication the money's there, and Grimm was at least quiet thereafter to wait and see what happens in the course of the next week. So my suggestion is, Cap, get with Paul.
You know, perception that we have agreed to transition funding makes it very difficult with education and other things where we've taken the line that, no, special revenue sharing or nothing. If you don't get the special revenue sharing, the program stop, and that therefore we're trying to put all the pressure on. If it's perceived that we gave ground on transition funding for some programs, why everybody will ask, why don't you do it on education? And I don't know what happened. All I saw was a little AP note that the mayors have said they have guaranteed transition funding. And whether this is so or not, this was, late last night, they five mayors emerged from the White House and said today they had been promised transition funding. And that read very badly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And then when you read the newspaper comments, you go out and read the 10 that you promised them a thing.
Well, that's right. But I mean, I think if we did not, then maybe something ought to be said fairly soon. Because there are an awful lot of other things where we've been saying no special revenue sharing, no funding. That the only way you're going to get a continuation is to give us the special revenue.
The position that was taken in here is the position we've been taking all along. Now, you fellows have been dealing in generalities. You say that the transition we have provided, and frankly there is transition provided, is not satisfactory in certain areas that it hurts you. Don't talk in generalities to us. Give us the specifics. We're not saying there's anything we can do about it, but before we can even consider the problem, we've got to have you zero in and what the priorities are of the things that bother you. Now, pursuant to that kind of discussion, they came in with a pep from the NYC today as top-level priorities. And as I say, hopefully, something can be done with that by way of clarification. That's not concession. It's clarification of what's already in the budget. And as Scripps was about to leave, he started saying something about, well, then what I'll state is that the president intends to give relief in this area. And I said, Nix. I said, that isn't what he said at all with respect to this. He said, we want the specifics of what's going on. And then Paul chimed in and gave him the exact language as to the continuing resolution part of it, because we can't be painted at this point, in my judgment, as having relaxed anything. If we do, the whole thing goes down the drain. Now, the press confuses this. For example, yesterday, I talked about Romney's specific program commitments on housing and told them, for Pete's sake, hold your water, in effect, until we come up with our announcements on that. If you're not happy with that, then scream, but don't scream till then. The press took that, and very deliberately, only in one paper, cast that around as being specific program commitments in other areas. But the press generally didn't take it that way. But we've got to be very careful with this, or that whole dike will go, whether it's EDA, whether it's older Americans, whether it's relocation money for people that get out of their homes, the thing can go down the drain. Let me just say too, Mr. President, I really do think that this business of getting out on the road and repeating what we said and got such good mileage on REA and on REAP and on the water and sewer and the rest is absolutely essential. There's been a lull out there, in my judgment, where it isn't coming across. When I talk to people in Cleveland, for example, they have us pictured now at a budget level that's probably somewhere around where you took office in 1969. And we've just got to put forth one heck of an effort to show that isn't so.
In other words, you're going to go out and try to prove the budget is big?
No, I was just about to say, that's a hell of a... You've got to really do both sides.
No, you're going to lose both sides. I mean,
you will?
If you go out in terms of... if you go out in terms of saying, look here, we double this or that, I know we all say this. But see, the thing you're up against, Mr. President, is this. The mayor of the town...
Either way, I agree.
The mayor of the town where you're going has just come out last week and said, the president...
experience?
The budget by 40%. And that means that we can't have this, we can't have that, we can't have the other thing. Now, what you have to say is, ladies and gentlemen, your mayor was talking to you about great expectations. As a matter of fact, we're not cutting his next year's budget by 40%. What we're cutting is his next year's expectations. And it's not any reflection on the mayor, because all through the Johnson and Kennedy years, the mayor's got in the habit of expecting that next year would be twice as big as this year. And up and up and up. And you see, what the president's done is to bring things back to reality, to real life, to the fact that federal dollars aren't make-believe money. They're real money, and they come out of your pocket. And so he's cutting back. And the fact is, he's actually sending more money to the cities this year than he sent last. But he's cutting back on those phony expectations out in the future. And when your mayor says that's a 40% cut, don't you believe it? It is a 40% cut. And you try and deflate it that way. Now, that's the only way I know to handle it and still have the best end of the argument both ways.
Well, you can get into the tax thing, which is still awfully big, and say that, yes, there have been increases that we had to allow because three-quarters of the budget is uncontrollable, and we've done that. We've held the increases to a point where they will not require a tax increase. And that if the things the mayor is talking about all went through, every single one of them, the amount he was expecting, you'd have between a 15% and a 20% income tax increase. And I think that, again, is the thing that can win.
If you don't make that argument, you're lost.
I don't think you're going to save too many lives by protesting about it.
Well,
I agree. I realize that you may say some bullets up here, but in terms of the country generally, it's pretty black and white. We can talk about that issue or the rest, and I guess the only one we can possibly do is on taxes.
That's very good. Well, it isn't just taxes. It's the idea that somebody finally is doing something about federal bureaucracy and federal spending.
I think we care about that.
Oh, I'll say
that. I think reversing a trend is maybe there are better ways of phrasing it, but what you are doing is really revolutionary, and it's the first time in about 30 years that anybody has tried to do this. And that, I think, is a problem at a major point. And then when you relate it to the taxes, you can drive it home. But it is really a very remarkable thing. And all these people writing around talking about how the powers of the presidency are being increased, the thing that's happening is that the president, for the first time in at least 30 years, is trying to diminish the size and power of the federal government. And that's
sure what you're talking about, the power of the
federal government. That's the other one that I'm watching. We're writing an article
about almost any of these other areas, including power from basically the federal government to the states and local government.
Cap is going to do a piece and answer to Herbert's series at the time.
It's a complete change, complete reversal of the trend, and that's a very difficult thing to do, and that produces all kinds of outcries from people who just want to keep on doing what we were doing. So
you have this problem, basically. You have to realize most congressmen and senators, as I understand the science, are facing foreclosure. And again, second, most congressmen and senators, including most Republicans who claim to be conservative, will, with regard to a project in their district, be liberal. And so that is why on this issue, I think the thing to do, though, as I mentioned to the leaders this morning, and I think what you've got to do as far as the Congress is quit screwing around with the Senate. Don't waste any time on anything that has to do with a veto. There is no way you will sustain any veto in the Senate. No way. I told Scott this morning. And
you can't.
He seemed to welcome hearing that. He's going to welcome the president, because the goddamn senator can't get in here anymore. Unless they're in for something we want. Now, we need them. Republicans in the House and about 15 Democrats, because all the others, in other words, look at the magic number.
145, whatever it is, for that. Forget the center. Don't waste any time on the centers.
None whatever.
On anything that has to do with these next 3 weeks. Put them off to the side. Way off to the side. The difficulty with most of us here, most of you too, because the center is supposed to be a big shot in the president, and a governor who spent too much money. Forget it. They can't help us. The Senate cannot help us. Don't spend any time on it now. Later on, we'll have to. But this is a very important strategic decision, John, that we've got to pound home. And that means butter up those House members and just say, well, we think the Senate's too irresponsible. Now, that'll burn the ass off of some of our Republicans over there, but they need to have a burn. Because they don't stand up. They do not stand up. And since they don't have the courage to stand up, United States Senate, which of course they should have a lot more than the House. All these House guys come up for election. Most of these senators, or many of the senators that presently are bitching around, people like Stevens and Curtis and others, for Christ's sakes, they just got elected. And ran about 15% behind the president in their states. So, they can afford to be states, but don't count on it. The Senate is not it.
Now, the other thing, though, is this
general business about pay and the rest. It's a little hard to get dry. It's a real question. You can or won't. You really? No, I haven't seen it. Well, you center around these folks. He totally agrees, disagrees with the idea that we ought to go out and explain that we're not cutting this, and we're not cutting that, we're not cutting that. He says, every time you do that, he says, you're just knocking down what you are. So you've just got to say, hell yes, we're cutting things, and we're cutting them because we don't want tax increases. Just keep it on that line. I think myself that he could be wrong in a sense. I mean, he could be right. He's right up to this point. The moment you confuse an issue, if you tell the people in one breath, look, all we're doing, we're spending $18 billion more. We've increased civil rights expenditures by 350%. We've increased food stamps expenditure by 375%. We've increased aid to the aged by 88%. We've increased aid to education by 92%, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The moment you say that, then you see your average listener just saying, I'm not listening. But you're doing that, of course, to say, no, we're not all that bad. We're really very compassionate, et cetera. But then at the end, you say, no, it's really a question. However, we're not going to increase anything that gives you a tax increase. So you try, in a sense, to be a liberal and a conservative at the same time, and it won't work. There's your problem. Now, when I say it hasn't, let me put it this way, it hasn't worked yet. I think in the public mind today, I fear there's a considerable amount of confusion on this point. Now, there may not be. There may not be for another reason, is that the attacks that are being made on us so violently, after the effect that we're just cutting hell on earth, yeah, probably create the impression that we're a bunch of Scrooges. But now the question is, and this really gets back to Earl's earlier slide, the question is, do we react to these attacks by, frankly, going on the offensive, not on the tax issue, but on the issue of, look, we're not all that bad. You can make an argument for that, but if you are, that's what you got to remember, it's a very basic decision. Well, the moment you go out and you say to the farmers, look, we're not all that bad, we love you and all that, we're spending a hell of a lot more than we used to and more than we ought to, you go out to the cities and all the rest and say you're going to do that, and you tell the city people as we did, look, you're going to, the bottom line is still that you're going to get as much as you did before. They probably are. Well, they probably are.
Community development. They're going to get $2.3 billion, which is more than our categorical grant.
Well, that's because you can't turn it off. We tried to turn it off.
Right, no, but just making your point. Sure.
Well, it's the pipeline.
In the urban renewal model cities and related programs, what we're coming up with in 75, yeah, with the slippage year in there, 74, is more than our 1973 appropriation, yeah, for all those categorical programs. Not by much, but a little.
I think you make a mistake in the rhetorical area, in going through this litany of so many percent up and so many percent up and so many percent up. We had it in all these speeches.
Yeah, that's why I, frankly, followed through on it in the newsletter on the tube.
And see, that's what Scott wanted this morning, I'm sure. I know, Scott wants to speak a little. But
Then you say, trust the president. He's exercising common sense here. That's sort of the Vietnam, Vietnam argument applied domestically. The president knows more than you do about what needs to be done here. And then you can use a little example. I've been having a lot of fun with the example of Congress appropriating $15 million for a dam, and then we discovered that it only costs 12. Now, Hubert Humphrey insists that even though it only costs 12, we're going to spend the 15 million. Now that isn't common sense, and yet that's what the Congress is arguing. Now take a further example. Let's suppose that the Congress has located that dam on quicksand, and we can build it for 12. Should the president spend the 12 and build the dam, or should he exercise common sense? Well, obviously, some congressmen would rather have the president build the dam and have it kill a lot of people. The president feels he's got the right not to spend that money if a mistake has been made in the program as it's been enacted by the Congress. Now let's go to the next step. The way CBS covers that is to show a picture of a hungry little kid and say that little kid's father can have a job driving a truck to build the dam if only the president would build the dam on a quicksand. And of course, when Daniel Shore comes on and shows you the picture of a little kid, it's argued that the president has no compassion for that little kid because he won't build the dam. I said, look out for anybody that argues to you compassion as a basis for the spending of federal dollars, because there's always more to it than just that. And then I get out of there just as fast as I can before they stop to think about that too long. But I've used that two or three times, and it's gone pretty well. And I think if we get into this business of are we stopping community action agencies, are community action agencies good or bad, and how much we're cutting out, and how much we're putting into the Head Start, and all that kind of thing, we're down on their level, and we can't win that argument.
There's only program by program. No, you can't program by program, and I think that's a very good set of examples. There are one or two that are very flagrant, and community action programs are things that do Head Start and follow through and all that stuff, and they can be done by direct applications. If you do them through the community action formula, you lose 40% of it, because that's overhead. That's what goes with it. So you can pick out a few specific examples. I say in all of these talks, that the problem is that there are a lot of people around who are still measuring compassion by the amount of dollars the government puts in. And their whole theory is that as soon as you have
the amount of government employed.
That's right. And that you don't show compassion by that. You show compassion by what the president is doing by trying to focus these dollars on the people who need them, not on a lot of overhead or a lot of salary, but on people who actually need them. And when you do that, for less money, you can get better results. And these are all variations of the same thing, but this idea that you show your compassion or your commitment by spending money is a very easy one to refute, and if anybody will listen. But the only other thing I'd say on the Senate, and I agree with that 100%, but I think it's time to go on the attack, because the Senate, we are now in the middle of a series of spectaculars that certain senators are, Teddy Kennedy, Muskie, and a few others are planning in their committee hearings. They're going 3, 4, and 5 a week, and they are getting all the television cameras up, and none of our Republicans will object, and they could, by a single objection, keep them all out. And they're banging the table and checking their watches to see if it's time for the evening news deadline, which is about 11:30 in the morning, and then they get mad right at that point. I've been through it now for about 5 in a row, and it's a regular pattern. And I think we ought to try some way, I don't know the best way, to take the offensive against that and talk about the phoniness of the whole thing. And that's it just look for this kind of thing day after day, and it's all part of the political campaign starting 2 to 3 years early. So the only end that I put on the Senate strategy is to try to take the offensive against it and predict what they're going to do and try and pull the rug out from under them on that. Again, it's a demagogic kind of
who would you have to do that?
Well, I try to do it myself during the hearings, but I don't know that you can do it very successfully that way. But I just think if we could get a few people to make this point in one way or another, either by speeches or maybe a few of the friendly writers or a few of them around or something of this kind, we could let the people know what to expect. But I don't know if you...
Mr. President, I rest for this rhetoric here. I'm just a simple country boy. I get lost.
Hold your wallet.
I get lost in these figures. I go to these farm audiences. I don't defend the cuts we made and reap and that kind of stuff. I slump over. I'll say, the president asked me to get you in. got more money to spend. That's what we want. Employment is up. I know we've had some difficulty with the unemployment rate, but yeah, the increase in employment is phenomenal in this country. And the increase in wages, as by what the RMD says, is phenomenal. The increase in real wages is great. And I think we can get out and say, now, a part of that is our goal is to give you, the individual citizen, more money to spend the way you want to spend it. And we got jobs out here, we got employment up, we make progress here, the farm income is up. And one of the ways to have you spend that money is, I'll use this illustration. I asked the farmer a while back and said, how are you doing? Well, plenty of money across the country. Stop. How did you get to stop? And that's the argument I use. The hell with the detail. I get lost in it myself.
I suppose what we're concerned about here is, what we're concerned about is what you tell this poor congressman. Because of Scott comes in at 4 and they say, you've got to give us chapter 3 running. Isn't that right?
Yes, sir.
Is that what he was asking today?
Yeah.
Tell us what programs are going up.
At the same time, I talked to his AA last night, and they've got this stuff stacked.
Halfway but Harsha Frank United the same way. Says, we don't have it. I don't have it anywhere. I knew damn well as AA had it, and I called Timmons, and it had been provided. So we got it to them again.
Went up in droves when the budget went.
But their other point, the other point was that it isn't getting to my people that what you're doing is not cutting everything back to the Middle Ages. That's strange coming out of Harsha, because Harsha is not exactly the most liberal human being I've heard in my life. But he says, I'm kind of a father confessor. He says, sure, tax increases are important to me, because that's kind of giving him a needle on. You want your people to be on the wrong side of this. Bill and I know each other pretty well. He says, look, he says, I'm like a precinct captain. They come to me when they want the kids circumcised and so on. He says, the problem I'm having out there is, it is playing back in my community, that the president is cutting this way back and taking away everything he's done over a period of time. And that doesn't play well. That we're reversing ourselves and taking away what we've given.
Well, it's obvious they're not getting any mail from people who support what we're doing. I don't think that's unfortunate.
That's right. That's why I said earlier, his presence is
a thing. Well, I got a big report from Rudy, and he gives me a lot of long stuff here, and I don't think he's got the balance.
I think that's why the campaign idea that John mentioned is pretty necessary now, though I don't know anybody that really wants to do it, but I think it is necessary because all that's getting out is the streams of the special interests which we hear in Washington and which float out into the country on sort of reflection. But I think it needs to be countered, and I think there are plenty of people who can counter. I think some of the local Republican organizations can stir up some kind of non-work.
What I get in my news clips, the HUD news clips all the time, is 300,000 cut by Nixon in X program. And they play that about every 3-4 days.